The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Far-left activists are still raging over the abortion ruling. They're now offering cash to tipsters who share physical locations of Supreme Court justices.
And that public bounty offer comes after protesters swarmed Justice Kavanaugh while dining at Morton's D.C. steakhouse last week. The restaurant, which defended a customer's right to eat in peace, has since been flooded with fake reservations and phone calls.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's such a horrible story, isn't it? Leftist group shut down D.C. They've been offering cash bounties for public sightings of Supreme Court justices. And it's not just the harassment that these Supreme Court justices have to endure. I just think of the business owner. You know, false reservations, tons of telephone calls. Look, they're proprietors. They're just doing business. Justice Kavanaugh, any justice, any American has a right to go and to dine. And they shouldn't be harassed, and the person providing that service shouldn't either. Maybe you could do that to the bank that the person banks at, or the gas station they filled up their car, or the grocery store they buy their groceries, you know, the mortgage company that holds their mortgage. It's ridiculous. Of course, Twitter has not centered those bounty tweets. Can somebody explain that one to me? I mean, Twitter shuts down everything, right? There's nothing about Hunter Biden's laptop. The algorithm they had when it came to searching for life issues, when it came to elections, certain things, totally gone. You won't find them. Pro-life groups have been censored. You know, crisis pregnancy centers have been banned. And yet Twitter has not censored those bounty tweets. That's the most insane thing I've ever heard. Yeah, they ran online, you know, no suspension of the account. Elon Musk, and this is a whole other conversation. You know, there's this back and forth. There's going to be, I'm sure, a lot of litigation over him pulling out of the Twitter deal. I wish Twitter would go away. I wish we had an alternative to it, to be honest with you. I really do. I wish there was an alternative to it. A platform where there was balance, where there was fairness, there wasn't the threat of being censored. There's, you often see, if you read The Pillar, they're on a thing called Substack. And I was talking to somebody over the weekend about Substack. They're saying, well, the reason that so many people are now gravitating to this blogging platform is simply because they promise not to censor. You know, and people want an area like that. Wouldn't it be nice to have a company like a Twitter or a Facebook or something that didn't censor the material? They didn't infect it with their woke ideology. It's crazy. The Supreme Court, of course, they ruled in favor of overturning Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision. And they were harassed leading up to that. I mean, they were really harassed. There was even an assassination attempt on Brett Kavanaugh. They're still being singled out. I think this is a huge story. I think this is a huge story. And I think we should be talking much more about it. Libs of TikTok, speaking of Twitter and all these other social media outlets, they highlighted an account where the influencer actually laughed at Morton Steakhouse and Kavanaugh being harassed. Listen to this.
Y'all, take a look. Since the owner has decided to defend Kavanaugh, he has been receiving fake reservations. Well, that's what happened when you mess with women, right? If you haven't already, don't forget to click that button because you know I will keep you updated.
Oh my gosh. I'm speechless over that. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You know, are you kidding me? Yeah, it's good. Go ahead, I hope she goes and harasses the gas station then too. And like I said, the grocery store and every other place goes around, comes around. It's silly. Actually, we need to be charitable. We actually need to respond with love. We should pray for her. Let's pray especially for protection over the Supreme Court justice and so many people who have really, really lost their way. These justices are doing their jobs. Is anyone harassing, Justice Sotomayor or Kagan over their positions? No. I was looking at there was a march or a rally in Chicago over the weekend. I didn't see much of the coverage of it. Just saw a little news clip. And the news clip I saw, it stood out to me because it showed you these pro death advocates, those who are so furious at Roe over, and it's all angry, and there's shouts, and there's megaphones, and there's this anger, you know, there's this intensity, there's this violence with this particular. On the other side, they showed you the competing rally, and it's the pro-lifers, those who are for protecting life, very calm, very peaceful. You don't hear any shouting. You see people with their rosary beads. I mean, these are two different worlds, aren't they? Two totally different worlds. Like I said, if you would have burned down or created acts of vandalism or did the damage that we saw happening leading up to the Dobbs decision of these crisis pregnancy centers, if you would have just taken the name crisis pregnancy center and made that a Planned Parenthood, the reaction from the mainstream media and the world would have been radically different from the government, from the president. Totally different. You know, not hearing a thing. Harassing Supreme Court justices? Don't forget, you've got this group. One final thing. I don't want to belabor this too much, but I'm just so struck by it. I think it's an important story. When you've got this left-wing activist group, Shutdown DC, paying, they said they would pay $50 to anyone who shares a confirmed sighting of Justice Kavanaugh, Alito, Clarence Thomas, Gorsuch, Amy Coney Barrett, or John Roberts. Yeah, we're missing a few other justices, right? The liberals aren't on that list. And they would pay $200 if the justice was still in the location where the sighting was after 30 minutes. And they tweeted this after Kavanaugh had to ditch his dinner at a steakhouse because these people gathered in front of the restaurant to harass him. It's a matter of safety. I don't blame the guy. I don't even blame him. He had PTSD. You know, there was a guy who was going to go kill him. He came with zip ties and duct tape and the weapons he needed to kill him, maybe his family. And of course, the guy called himself in. It was not right. But this type of behavior exacerbates that type of thinking and behavior. The problem is that, you know, Twitter has a policy that excludes using it in a way that harass people. But again, I just want to go back to Twitter. It hasn't done anything about that particular tweet. It's still up. You know, so we'll see what happens with Musk, whether he's going to do anything. He withdrew his offer, as you might know, maybe you don't know, since Twitter wouldn't reveal anything about their bot accounts. You know, there's a lot of bots on Twitter, and they think that it might be as high as 20%. And Musk says, hey, I want to pay for real people, not for bots. So they think a lot of this litigation will probably continue. The New York Times today also reported, and we'll be talking about this too with Ed Marcy. We're going to be speaking to Professor Robert George. We got a great lineup here for you today, and I really hope that you'll be able to hang out with me. This is a really important story as well. It's one that we'll see what shakes out in the not too distant future here. The New York Times, as we know, can be pretty liberal at times. They reported today, though, that their poll among Democrats, it showed 64% of them, 64%, they want someone other than President Biden to be their presidential candidate. I mean, that is stunning. That's 2 years away. According to the Times, they're reporting that three-quarters of registered voters see the United States moving in the wrong direction. Very pervasive sense of pessimism that spans every corner of the country, whether it's age or racial group or cities or suburbs or rural areas, as well as both political parties. In fact, only 13% of American voters, 13%, look at these numbers. They said the nation's on the right track. That is the lowest point in Times polling since the depth of the financial crisis more than a decade ago. On top of that, only 33% of voters said they approve of the president's performance. So you'll hear more about that shortly. Coming up, Ed Marcy is going to be joining us, and we'll get into that with him. And you're more than welcome to join me here anytime as well. It's always good to talk with you. One other story here I think is telling. The world's population is increasing. Bloomberg was reporting that the world's population is expected to reach 8 billion people on November 15th. That's according to the UN. And that forecast also says that India, which, you know, has a huge population, right? So does China, right? India is going to surpass China as the most populous country on Earth. So the Secretary General from the UN said this. He says, this is an occasion to celebrate our diversity, recognize our common humanity, and marvel at advancements in health that have extended lifespans and dramatically reduced maternal and child mortality rates. And I love that. I want to applaud him for saying that. I mean, population, I don't know if you remember Paul Ehrlich or all this talk decades ago about how we're going to be overpopulated, there won't be enough food, you know, that's going to be a terrible time for humanity. I love what the Secretary General of the UN says. This is an occasion to celebrate our diversity, recognize our common humanity. We are one people, right? And marvel at the advancements that have extended lifespans. And it really is true. I mean, take a look at our farming advances. You know, there's concern about how you're going to feed these people. I mean, we could feed the world now. It's incredible, from everything from technology to plant and irrigate and harvest, to the advancements in medicines and treatments. So it's a good thing. You know, God is in control of everything. And I really do believe that, you know, we cannot determine who lives and who doesn't. And we should never put constraints on God's divine plan. That's for sure. The Holy See, too, announced that Pope John Paul I, he's going to be beatified on September the 4th. Wish I could be there. That's going to be a mass at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, and Pope Francis is going to celebrate it. Pope Francis, by the way, he has canonized more saints than anyone in the history of the church. I would have thought it was John Paul II, right? Now, Francis, I think he superseded that. He actually canonized about 800 saints at one sitting one time. He canonized the martyrs of Otranto, but he's up there. I don't know the exact number, but he'll add to that number with Pope John Paul I. So, of course, Pope John had the shortest reign in modern papacy. It was, what, 33 days? And there are a lot of conspiracy theories about his death. You know, was it murder? What happened? Was the Italian mafia in? What happened? Now, all those have been debunked. They've all been debunked. His cause is going to be they're going to present a reliquary with John Paul's the first relics in it. So, and one final story, and let's talk about what's going on in the White House. I stumbled across this. I'm going to reach out to the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help to come on, because I just saw this story moments ago. I didn't know about this. I missed this. Maybe you're aware of it. The National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help is the only approved Marian apparition site in the country. It started something I think that should be applauded. We should participate in. It's called the Shepherd Project. They're praying for every bishop, each bishop in our country, every single day. And they actually started on May the 1st with Archbishop Listecki of Milwaukee. Then they continued the next day with Bishop David Ricken of Green Bay, followed by, you know, Bishop William Callahan of La Crosse. And they're continuing each day for each bishop of the country all the way through October. And if you want more information, just go to the championshrine.org/shepherd. Dash Project, I think, is the domain. Just go to the website itself. You'll find it. And championshrine.org is the best way to go. But we'll talk more about it. I think it's a great campaign. You know, I'm a big believer in the power of prayer. You know how important I think that is. So let's join them in that. Let's pray for our bishops especially. And they certainly need our prayers, as does our current president. We'll talk about that. In fact, let's talk about that. Ed Morrissey will be joining me in just a few minutes here, and we'll get his take. The New York Times reported today, and I was reading this this report earlier this morning. They did polling among Democrats, and as I was just sharing with you, they went ahead and they asked people about the president of the United States, right? The results were stunning. 64% want somebody other than President Biden to be president. 64%, 2 out of 3, say no way. We do not want him. Do not want him. According to the Times, more than 3/4 of registered voters see the United States moving in the wrong direction. It's a very pervasive sense of pessimism, as I was saying, spans all over. 13% of American voters said that the nation was on the right track. You know, that means that 87% think they were on the wrong track. And as I mentioned before, the lowest approval rating of a president since, you know, polling began. But that's not the only bad news. Joe Biden, of course, I ask you to pray for him as I do every day. I pray for the president. I pray for the Speaker of the House. I pray for our world leaders as well as others. I encourage you to do the same thing. it brings about change. And it also brings the grace of protection to our country, which I think we need. But the Times was reporting that the president was originally scheduled to go to the Middle East after his last trip to Europe. However, the White House decided that would be better for some other time. And the way the Times delicately put it, they said this, and I'll quote them. Quote, but the reality is that, you know, managing the schedule of the oldest president in American history presents distinct challenges. As Mr. Biden insists, he plans to run for a second term. His age has increasingly become an uncomfortable issue for him, his team, and his party. I mean, you could say that again, right? The Gallup organization put out a poll showing that confidence in the institution of the presidency of the United States, it fell 38% last year, down to 23% this year. And on top of that, the White House communication director, she's taken a lot of heat over this Dobbs decision, and a lot of criticism that the president hasn't done enough to save abortion access. And she said this. She says, you know, Joe Biden's goal in responding to Dobbs is not to satisfy some activists who've been consistently out of step with the mainstream Democratic Party. To say that, it didn't go over well. It just did not go over well. I'm joined right now by Ed Morrissey. He's senior editor of hotair.com. Great sub-host on this program. Fills in for Hugh Hewitt on Salem. And you can check him out at hotair.com. Ed hosts his own podcast as well, and I hope you'll check that out. Ed, good to have you with me today. Thanks for taking your time.
Well, Drew, it's always great to be on with you. Thanks.
Yeah, president's approval ratings, let's talk about that. They're dismal. I've been reading a lot about them. Multiple people are now reporting on his presidency and where attitudes are across the country. Why, I guess, is the question. There's a lot of different areas people are disenchanted with, but why? Is it COVID? Is it the handling of the pandemic? Is it inflation? Is it Afghanistan? I mean, what is it? Is it any one thing? I mean, why is this guy in such dismal numbers?
Well, it's a combination of things, right? I mean, first off, this was a president who was enjoying, you know, moderately decent job approval ratings in the first few months of his presidency. He'd gotten the American Rescue Plan, you know, the $1.9 trillion stimulus/relief plan in March 2021. So he got an early major legislative win, which later, of course, came back to haunt him because that triggered a massive inflationary wave, which economists like Larry Summers had been warning all along would happen. But he was doing really well, or at least moderately well. And then you had two things happen over the summer. One, you had the Delta wave, which delayed the so-called Independence Day from COVID, which I think put a little bit of a dent in his standing. But really, the withdrawal from Afghanistan, the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, his promise not to leave without getting Americans out and then abandoning Americans anyway in Afghanistan, the 13 deaths that resulted from that. When that happened, prior to that point, there wasn't a single poll that showed Joe Biden what we call underwater, in negative territory when it comes to job approval. After the end of August, you don't find any poll. I don't believe any poll, but certainly there wasn't any poll in the first few weeks that showed him in positive territory. Not one. And I think in October there was a couple of them that came back, but since then it's been just a steady decline. It is when you lose confidence, when you do something that shakes the confidence of voters, and when people get a sense that you are either lying or incompetent or both, then every single crisis is additive, right? You don't get a benefit of a doubt, and right, you get blamed for things that maybe you could avoid blame for under normal circumstances. In the case of inflation, you know, they continued to try to say inflation is growth, inflation is transitory, inflation is corporate greed, inflation is Putin's price hike. There's this whole series of messaging that doesn't work, and that's additive as well because nobody believes you at the end of all that string. So that was true among Republicans, that was among independents, but I think dropping the ball on the Dobbs decision as spectacularly as they did is the inflection point among Democrats, and that's why 2 weeks later, you're starting to see Democrats saying, we're done with this president. We're absolutely done with him.
Yeah, you know, he's coming out now saying he wants to codify it. And, of course, he had that executive order, et cetera. Do you think he's going to run for a second term in light of Dobbs, in light of everything else that's happening, and in light of how low his approval numbers are amongst Democrats?
Well, I think he thinks he wants to run, but I think you're running into a problem here where there's just not going to be any support for it. And when you have that, you're going to have, you know, it's like vultures circling the carcass, mm-hmm. right? And I don't mean mm-hmm. to put this too gross, but okay. You take a look what happened in 1968, right? 1967, 1968. Lyndon Johnson had popularity issues in 67 and 68, which led him to withdraw from the primary race when it became clear that he wasn't going to be able to, right. you know, command the loyalty of the party. And then, of course, you have that whole series of awful events that took place after that. You know, Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. And they had to basically broker that convention and have Hubert Humphrey run for the presidency out of that convention. Terrible, terrible, terrible year. But the basis of that was that Lyndon Johnson had not just lost the confidence of the country, he'd lost the confidence of his own party. And his numbers weren't anywhere near as bad as you're seeing for Joe Biden right now, both in terms of job approval and in terms of favorability.
I don't think he's going to run personally. I know he wants to. I don't see that happening. Although there was some polling that was done that says that if he ran against Trump, he had a slight edge, which still totally shocked me that, you know, even in light of everything that according to that poll that he might have the edge. But there's an interesting side note that I saw it, and I like your take on this. There was a person who wrote a column with the suggestion that Kamala Harris doesn't actually want to be president. She doesn't want to run either, because if he doesn't run, who's next? The vice president? That seems like a stretch to me. But your thoughts on if Joe doesn't run, if President Biden doesn't run, who will run? And does Kamala have any interest?
Well, I think she does. And I know what Andrew Stiles was getting at when he wrote that column for the Washington Free Beacon. But it was more about that she didn't want to be in charge of anything. The problem for vice presidents is that they're never in charge of anything. And what Joe Biden's been trying to do is been trying to push pretty unpopular crises onto Kamala Harris's shoulders and having her run that. So it gives him some distance from that. And if she doesn't want to step up to that, there's a good reason why. She doesn't want to get stuck with Joe Biden's, you know, negative approval ratings on these types of issues. But Harris isn't the answer either. I mean, I think the Democrats thought that she was going to be a pretty good candidate. And I think if just on paper, as you might say, in 2019, she looked like she could walk away with the nomination just because she came from California. She was a fresh face. You know, it was a party that really wanted to highlight diversity. And she's, you know, Indian and African-American and a female. And all of that stuff was going for her. And California just moved up its primary, right? So strategically, it was a perfect position for her. She came out and was just really a bad candidate. She's just not a good candidate. So I think that they're going to be looking, but I think that they're probably not going to be looking inside the Biden administration. I think anybody that's been inside the Biden administration is probably not going to come out of it looking good. So they'll probably look to governors.
Yeah, you got Newsom, you got Pritzker, you got a lot of other people who are already lobbying for that. I only have a moment or two left, but I'd love your take on these abortion activists who are not happy with the Biden administration with Dobbs, of course. What do you make of these this organization is now putting out a bounty, if you will, on the Supreme Court justices? Did you hear about that?
I did, and I think that there's a couple different things going on here. First off, I think that group is just a group of nutcases who probably have some funding, and it would be very interesting to track down where they're getting their funding, and maybe we'll get some, you know, enterprising investigative reporter. But the reason why Democrats are souring on Biden after the Dobbs decision is because it was entirely predictable. You could have predicted this outcome from the oral arguments in December, from the fact that the Supreme Court took up the issue at all. You could have predicted this. They had months to work on a response. They had at least 6 or 7 weeks after the leak of the Alito draft to work up a response.
Right.
And they didn't do any of that. They completely dropped the ball. And that is that on a key issue like that among progressive activists, that is basically politically unforgivable, and for good reason. I mean, it's a terrible look at the competence level in this administration.
In terms of all the issues that affect Americans, I mean, inflation is the top of that list, and you can go down. You remember the poll that came out last week. They talked about how abortion is like 5% of the in terms of the concern. Only about 5% of the population even ranked that as their number one issue. Will it have any play come the midterms? The fact that Dobbs and the Supreme Court has rolled the way it has, what will that do in terms of the midterms? What do you think it'll do for the general? It's kind of a far way out. I don't know if I'll have any impact by then, but your thoughts.
So I'll try to be quick about this. First off, what's going to impact the elections is the daily lived experience of American voters. And that is not abortion. That is the economy. That's gas prices. That's, you know, shortages at the grocery store. That's crime, and to a certain level, maybe even immigration as it relates to crime. But really, it's going to be the economy, the economy, the economy. That's really what's going to drive the vote. The second thing is the reason why abortion isn't going to drive this is if you take a look at that Harvard-Harris poll and take a look at where Americans actually are on abortion, they're nowhere near the bill that Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi tried to float in May on this. The amount of people who are in favor of unlimited abortion all throughout pregnancy is somewhere around 20%. And even among Democrats, only 40% supported abortion from 23 weeks forward. 60% wanted it limited to 15 weeks or less. And so it's a loser when you get down to the actual policies that are going to be debated. And if Democrats are running on unlimited abortion throughout an entire pregnancy, that might actually have an impact, but it's not going to be the one that they think it is.
Yeah, well said. Ed, thank you for being here. People want to follow you or read your writing, get tuned into your broadcast. What's the best way to connect?
Well, Drew, thank you very much. At Ed Morrissey on Twitter, you can find me there, and hotair.com.
Always a delight, Ed. I know we'll talk again. A lot will be happening in the not-too-distant future. Thanks for coming on, though.
Thank you, sir.
All right, stay with us. When I return, Professor Robert George will join me, and as I often say, one of the most intelligent, brilliant men that I have an opportunity to talk to. The president, of course, has signed an executive order, and Archbishop Lurie also has come out, and he's spoken about the president's executive order. I'll fill you in on what the bishop has had to say. We'll take a look at the executive order, what's contained in it, and get Professor George's perspective. You can join me, too. Feel free to dial in anytime. The number's 888-914-9149. We're back with more right after this.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio line, is hiring today with several positions throughout the U.S. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with COF, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
This is all about bodily autonomy and choice. And so, you know, people have a right to be pregnant and have a pregnancy, but also not have a pregnancy.
Dr. Meg Autry, a UCSF OBGYN, said she's had the idea for a vessel that would provide surgical abortions and reproductive health care services for a very long time. But it was the recent Supreme Court decision that helped inspire her to kick it into gear. She's now spearheading the PROWESS, which stands for Protecting Reproductive Rights of Women Endangered by State Statutes. The vessel would be located in federal waters in the Gulf of Mexico, near states where abortions are banned. She wants to offer the services at low or no cost.
People that care deeply about access to reproductive rights know that we have to be innovative and creative in order for patients to be able to continue to have access. We know internationally that when access is limited or abortion is illegal, patients die.
The cost, at least $20 million.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, their legal team, and what a bizarre, macabre, dark, sad story. Their legal team believes there's a swath of federal water where licensed providers could safely and legally provide abortions out of the reach of state laws. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Thanks for joining me here today. A floating abortion clinic in the Gulf. Wow. As an effort to bypass bans. A lot of creative thinking underway right now. Again, we just need to pray. You know, Maggie and I were having a conversation earlier today before the broadcast. And, you know, we were talking about how, you know, abortion's not, you know, the Dobbs decision, the end of Roe, is not just about the end of abortion. It's really about providing service, care, support for women in crisis pregnancies and being pro-life, highlighting the goodness of being open to life. I think that's really where the next step is. But after that Supreme Court decision on Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, which overturned the Roe case, President Biden, a Catholic, again, I always want to highlight that because the man is not in communion with the faith, and we really need to pray for him that he gets right. He's in some serious, I think, spiritual, moral trouble here. He came out and expressed outrage at the decision. But what he didn't do was take any action to counter what the Supreme Court did. Now, a lot of people were surprised. You heard Ed Marcy pointing that out just a few moments ago. The administration, they seem to be almost flat-footed, right? Almost like, oh, we didn't see this coming, right? The trajectory of the court was very clear. Even when the case was heard in December, and back then Chief Justice John Roberts was expressing his concern about overturning, you know, Roe and Casey, and it meant that, you know, we could see the writing on the wall. Then came that leak, you know, the first draft of the opinion in May, which I thought made it vividly clear what was coming down the road. But still, when it came out, it took 2 weeks, 2 weeks for the president to come out with an executive order that was meant to blunt what the Supreme Court did. And, you know, you wonder why. Was he, you know, is he only taking this position publicly because he feels he has to? Is his heart maybe in a different place? Why was the administration so blind to this? But even, you know, that didn't do much, mostly because there wasn't a whole lot, you know, the executive branch can do about what happened. I mean, he came out with that executive order on Friday. But the decision to overturn the court's 73 ruling allowing abortion on demand meant that, you know, the issue has returned to the states, although Congress can also now act on the issue. And if voters give the two chambers of Congress over to Republican control in November, it'll be really interesting to see what comes. I think there'll be some action taken. May not be what the Democrats want. But here to give us some perspective on this is Professor Robert George. He's a McCormick Professor of Jurisprudence and the director of the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions at Princeton University. A wonderful Catholic. I have often said I know people who have suggested he should have been a Supreme Court justice. I think that would have been fantastic. I'm lucky enough to be able to talk with him today. Good to have you back with us, Professor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Boy, a lot to talk about. Let's start with the executive order, if we could. I mean, the president and the White House seemed kind of flat-footed, as I said, they caught flat-footed when this came out. We all knew it was coming. It was very likely that the decision in Dobbs would overturn Roe. Why did it take them so long, and what do you make of what some think is kind of a toothless executive order?
Well, it is a toothless executive order. I don't know what to make of the delay. It was pretty clear from the start that there wouldn't be a heck of a lot that Biden could do by executive order, so he could have done what he waited 2 weeks to do in 2 days. Not only did he not do much, which of course leaves the pro-abortion people very upset, it took a long time to not do much, which upsets them even more. That probably reflects the general disarray in the Biden White House these days. There are clearly very serious problems in the White House. Lay aside ideology or partisan considerations, Democrat, Republican, pro-life, pro-abortion. There are problems in the White House. It's not being well managed. The president is not in good shape. He doesn't have control. So this probably reflects that as much as anything else. Let me, though, Drew, say a word about executive orders. Mm-hmm. As a constitutional matter, the executive branch, the president of the United States, has no legislative authority. He has no legitimate power to legislate. For that matter, neither do courts. If you look at our Constitution, the actual document, which I wish more people would do more often, if you look at the very first article, the very first sentence, indeed the very first word, it is the word all, A-L-L, all. And what it says is, all legislative power herein granted is vested in a Congress of the United States consisting of a House of Representatives and a Senate. Now, all means all. That's what it meant to the Founding Fathers. That's what it has always meant, and that's what it means to us. That means the executive has none, and the judiciary has none. all legislative powers in the hands of Congress. Way too often, and this goes to Republican as well as Democratic administrations, way too often, presidents attempt to legislate by way of executive orders. And there's a bit of that in this new Biden executive order, but for the most part, it is toothless. But my fundamental point here is, when it comes to abortion or anything else, presidents do not have legislative power, and they should not be abusing executive authority in order to legislate. What executive orders are for, and all they are for, is the management of the executive branch of government. The president, as the chief executive, the man in charge, person in charge of the executive branch of government, has to be able to set rules and regulations for the internal management of the government. That's different from legislating, making rules as matters of public law. That job is Congress's job, job of the state legislatures. So if Biden goes beyond what he's done here to begin trying to legislate again with an executive order to expand abortion, courts should step in and put a stop to that, because that in itself is an abuse of constitutional presidential authority.
My guest today, Professor Robert George. Professor, some people are claiming that women who travel from one state to another to get an abortion could be prosecuted by the state where they came from for doing that, even if a state passed a law like that. Would that be constitutional?
Well, there is a recognized right of interstate travel, and there are no restrictions that I know that are on that right. This specific question has not been tested, but my understanding of the policies that pro-life people have in mind in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision is to maintain what has been the historical rule, which is not punishing women for abortions or in relation to abortion offenses, but rather to publish the to punish those facilities that perform abortions, or to punish those who facilitate abortions, yeah, as with any other crime. But on the specific question you ask, because we have not had such laws in place historically, there is no settled legal understanding of how it works. There are no court decisions on the matter.
Interesting. You know, at the press conference when the president gave out gave out a lot of, I think, misinformation, including claiming that doctors treating women who suffer miscarriages, that they'd be prosecuted. Those treating ectopic pregnancies could also be prosecuted. And I've heard a lot of that talk recently. You want to clear that up, because I know there's no truth to that claim. We're not gonna prosecute a woman who has a miscarriage for going and getting that treated, right?
Let me be blunt about this. That is not only false, that is insane. And a person would have to be insane to believe such nonsense. We have never in all of our history, when our abortion statutes were at their most protective of unborn life, ever prosecuted women. Well, in general, we haven't prosecuted women. We've prosecuted abortionists. We've never prosecuted anybody for providing services, health care services, for a woman who has undergone a miscarriage. Yep. That's just not what it's about. And for anyone to claim that is fundamentally dishonest. And as I say, for anybody to believe it is insane. Same for the care of ectopic pregnancies.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
Catholic hospitals have always been able to perform procedures that do unavoidably, unfortunately, result in fetal death as a side effect of an otherwise legitimate medical procedure, the sort of medical procedure that would be performed even if there weren't a baby present growing in the mother's womb. For example, the removal of cancerous uterus, where it's threatening the woman's life, and where the baby is yet developed enough to be able to deliver the baby. So as a result, removing the uterus to save the woman from the virulent cancer, the baby won't die. Not only has the church condemned that by any means, it's not been treated as an abortion. That's not been prohibited at Catholic hospitals. Catholic hospitals have performed those procedures without in any way violating Catholic morality. So the disinformation, the lies that are being told are simply outrageous. And let me just add one more element to this.
Sure.
One of the things behind these lies is old-fashioned anti-Catholic bigotry, trying to smear the Catholic Church because people don't like Catholicism, whether those people don't like it because they belong to another religion or whether those people don't like it because they don't like what Catholic morality teaches, including the principle of profound, inherent, and equal dignity of each and every.
Amen.
You know, the fascists didn't like what Catholics taught. The Nazis didn't like what Catholics taught. Communists didn't like what Catholics taught. And now the woke theologues don't like what Catholicism is. And to any defamation, any smear, any slander, any libel to blacken the reputation of the Catholic Church, including by promoting insane ideas like women will be punished for miscarriages or doctors will not be able to treat ectopic pregnancies or similar situations.
Right. Hey, Professor, thank you. Hold the thought. I got to take a short break here. When we come back, if you want to join us, I only have the professor for a few more minutes. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Taking a look at all that's unfolding in the country from the Dobbs decision to the president's executive order. And I'll share with you what the chair of the U.S. Bishops Pro-Life Committee on Saturday had to say about President Biden's executive order. That and a whole lot more coming up straight ahead. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, we'll certainly pray for our country. Let's pray for our president, and let's just pray for one another. I think it's such a powerful time of prayer. Take your calls in about maybe 10, 15 minutes. Kick that prayer off right now. I have the great privilege of speaking to Professor Robert George. He's taught at Harvard Law School, is a former chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, and it's always good to tap into his expertise. Professor, the chair for the U.S. Bishops Pro-Life Committee, after the president issued his executive order, he came out, and he says that the executive order aimed at protecting abortion is deeply disturbing. And here's his words, quote, "It's deeply disturbing and tragic that President Biden is choosing instead to use his power as the president of the United States to promote and facilitate abortion in our country, seeking every possible avenue to deny unborn children their most basic human and civil right, the right to life, rather than using the power of the executive branch to increase support and care for mothers and babies. The president's executive order seeks only to facilitate the destruction and defenseless, voiceless, to facilitate the destruction of defenseless, voiceless human beings." And he went on. I would like your perspective on this. I mean, you're Catholic. I'm Catholic. Joe Biden, I think, is bringing a lot of scandal to the country because he is a Catholic. And people think, well, Catholics must be okay with abortion if the president is. And I know he goes to Mass on Friday, on Saturdays or Sundays. I see him, you know, do that on the news. How do we bring clarity to this issue? Do you think that the church is doing enough? Should we be more vocal? Should he, like Archbishop Cordiglione did with Nancy Pelosi, maybe say to Joe Biden, hey, you shouldn't receive the Eucharist, or go even further? Because I think this is scandalous. I think it breeds a lot of confusion. I think this man's doing a lot of harm.
Well, first, let me congratulate the bishop and the bishop's conference on that powerful and compelling statement. It is pitch perfect. He's hit the nail on the head. Why on earth is the president of the United States, lay aside for a moment, we'll get back to it, this question of his being a Catholic who happens to be president of the United States, but why on earth is the president of the United States putting resources and giving his attention to trying to facilitate further lethal violence, further abortion, further killing of unborn babies, rather than marshaling resources and using his attention and his influence to bring practical care, moral, spiritual, material support to women who are in difficult situations as a result of a problem pregnancy? There's no question that there are lots of women who are experiencing problems as a result of pregnancy. They're in difficulties. Sometimes those have to do with the financial circumstances they're in. Sometimes they have to do with the practical familial circumstances that they're in. Perhaps they are in a situation with an abusive boyfriend or under pressure from parents or from employers or from a husband pressuring them to have abortions and so forth. There are serious issues that need to be addressed. We need to come to the aid of women, as the pro-life movement has done for its entire existence. We need the president on board with this. We need the support of our government for those women. We don't need to be offering them the snake of abortion when they ask for bread.
Right.
So I'm behind the bishop on this. I think 100% that is absolutely correct.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You know, you talk about handing them a snake instead of a loaf of bread. There's talk right now of allowing abortions on federal lands. There's even this suggestion of a boat out in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico to do abortions on the high sea. Final thoughts maybe here. I mean, where do we go next? I mean, you see these creative ideas to continue to somehow allow the destruction of innocent life in this country. What's the next step? I mean, where do you see us headed?
Well, even someone as virulently pro-abortion as Joe Biden has, thank goodness, not gone along with the idea of providing abortion sanctuaries on ships in the Gulf of Mexico or on federal lands or in federal buildings or things like that. The president's spokesman recently said that the president does not intend to do that. So thank God for that. But, you know, now it's the time to step forward, join hands with those of us in the pro-life movement, those who do honor the profound, inherent, and equal dignity of each and every member of the human family, and start coming to the aid of women who need us. We in the pro-life movement have been doing this for years and years, years and years and years, decades, on the skimpiest of resources. We don't get the millions upon tens of millions, ultimately hundreds of millions or billions that Planned Parenthood gets from the government for the lethal violence of abortion. With a fraction of that money, we could be bringing practical care and assistance to women who are in need. And then you asked me about the situation of scandal with a Catholic president very visibly promoting the idea of abortion. Well, the church has faced this issue before. This is not the first time. This is not our first rodeo. Back in the 1950s and early 1960s, Joseph Rummel, the Bishop of New Orleans, Louisiana, faced a situation where three prominent Catholic political figures were promoting segregation and racism in defiance of the church's teaching of the profound, inherent, and equal dignity of each and every member of the human family. Bishop Rummel warned them. One was the most important political figure in Louisiana, the Democratic political leader, Leander Paris. And Bishop Rummel called them in. He met with them. He warned them. They refused to back down. They undermined the church's teaching. They caused scandal. And you know what he did? He excommunicated the three of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you think that the liberals and the New York Times jumped on him and said, oh, the bishop is violating the principle of separation of church and state. Oh, he's interfering in politics and that's wrong. No. They cheered him on. They rightly said that he had done exactly the right thing, that he was a prophet and a true leader for racial justice. Well, we're in exactly the same situation now. President Biden, Nancy Pelosi, the others who flaunt their Catholic faith but endorse abortion are just like Leander Paris. They are denying the profound, inherent, and equal dignity of each and every member of the human family, which is the most foundational principle of Catholic moral belief, of Judeo-Christian moral belief. It's the one put forward in the very first chapter of the very first book of the Bible in Genesis, where we're taught that the human being is made in the very image and likeness of God. Every human being is therefore equal as a child of God to every other human being. You flaunt your faith while denying that and undermining that principle. You are causing grave scandal. You're sending a message that Christianity doesn't have anything to say about the equal dignity of all human beings, when in reality, the principle of the equal dignity of all human beings is at the very base of Christian moral belief.
Well, Professor, I want to thank you for your time. It is such a delight to talk to you and to tap into your genius. You're welcome here anytime. I know how busy you are. I'm grateful you made time for us today. We're about to pray the chaplet, and I'll pray for you, for your intentions, and please remember us in your prayers, okay?
I'm extremely grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Professor Robert George. Please do say a prayer for him. We're about to pray the chaplet of divine mercy. Coming up, there's a line or two open. You can get in. Before we wrap it up, let me sneak Rosa in here very quickly. She's been hanging since the very beginning of the show. Rosa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. You were talking about the vigil that was done 2 weeks ago. Well, a little bit over a week at the downtown Manhattan.
Okay.
I was one of them. I've been doing this for many years. Never had this kind of problems. You know, I mean, we encountered some resistance, but quite little, nothing compared to what's been going on the last few months. 3 months ago, we were not allowed to even go outside because the police said we cannot guarantee your protection. So after mass, which is normally we go to mass first and then we walk 2 blocks, only 2 blocks from the church to Planned Parenthood, okay? And those 2 blocks, the police said we cannot guarantee your safety. So we had to stay in the church. This was right after the leak.
Now, I remember that. Rosa, I got to hold you right there. So, you know, Rosa was saying that she was with a group praying the rosary and walking. And a lot of protesters were also present, and they were very violent. I made that connection to what happened in Chicago over the weekend. See, the culture of death, very animated and very angry. You see the culture of life, prayer-filled.